Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program Number 517, Update on September 11th and Related Matters. This program is being recorded on July 2nd of the year 2005. Note that at the end of this side, I'm going to give information about a number of websites containing additional information which will help to flesh out listeners' understanding of some of the things that they're going to be hearing about in this program, and also some websites that people can utilize in order to help fight back, so to speak. Anyway, that will be at the end of the side. This weekend, and again, this has been recorded on July 2nd of 2005. This is the weekend of July 4th. Tomorrow is Independence Day, and this is the weekend in which the United States celebrates the occasion of its gaining independence from Great Britain. I think it is ironic that this holiday is called Independence Day because, unfortunately, the United States has become only too dependent on a number of things, ranging from foreign creditors to just sheer, blind, bloody, dumb luck, which so far has kept us from experiencing a numbingly destructive terrorist attack. And one of the reasons why the next big attack is going to be in many ways worse than September 11th is because of the economic effects that's very likely to have. The United States has been placed in a position by George Walker Bush of being far more vulnerable than it was going into his first administration. Not only has the beehive of much of the Muslim world been stirred up and set in strong resolve against the United States because of Bush's Iraqi misadventure and other less than adroit actions by this administration, but at the same time as that beehive of the Muslim world has been stirred up, the United States has been weakened economically and diplomatically, and the chances of successfully neutralizing some of the agents that are currently ranged against the United States are that much more slender. One of the things that again renders the United States extremely vulnerable is its economic situation. You don't even want to hear about all the different kinds of debt that Bush has run up and or exacerbated. But one of the many areas in which the United States remains extremely vulnerable to a terrorist attack from an economic standpoint concerns the failure of the insurance industry and also the failure of the current administration to help to shepherd the insurance industry in a positive direction. The insurance industry has not come up with an adequate potential response to the threats that are posed by terrorism, and in turn, the Bush administration has failed to work with the insurance industry in order to basically make the American economic landscape reasonably secure from an insurance standpoint against a massive terrorist incident. There was an article about that in the Financial Times of London of June 21st of this year, talking specifically about how the failure of the American insurance industry to adequately insure businesses against terrorism and how the failure of the current administration to see to it that the insurance industry has adequately provided for a major terrorist attack. Anyway, that combined failure, the failure of the insurance industry and the Bush administration, has rendered the United States far more vulnerable from an economic standpoint to a catastrophic terrorist incident, and the nature of that catastrophe may very well be economic. Financial Times of Tuesday, June 21st of 2005 has the following article by Ellen Kelleher of the Financial Times. It's called "Insurance Gives Too Little Cover for Terror." This article reads, "Future terrorist attacks could disrupt the U.S. economy because the system of terrorism insurance in its present state would not offer businesses adequate financial protection," a new study by the RAND Corporation indicates. Terrorism insurance does not protect businesses against attacks by domestic terrorists, nor does it cover attacks involving chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons, the report points out. Also, many businesses have neglected to buy terrorism insurance because the cost has soared since the attacks of September 11th. RAND analysts recommend that Congress consider proposals that would help lower the cost of terrorism insurance to encourage more businesses to buy it. They also believe Congress should expand the Terrorism Risk Insurance Act, or TRIA, which provides a federal backup to cover insurers' losses in case of a terrorist attack. Peter Chalk of RAND said, quote, "Protecting businesses against the economic impact of a terrorist attack should be part of a robust homeland security effort," unquote. TRIA's fate still hangs in the balance in Washington as Congress has yet to decide whether to extend it. It's set to expire by the end of the year. Insurers, some of whom funded the RAND study, are lobbying the government aggressively amid fears that its passage could be derailed. The Treasury is expected to release a long-awaited analysis on TRIA's effectiveness by the end of the month. Some Republicans oppose its passage, as they think terrorism insurance should be left to the markets. Parenthetically, Dave would add, surprise, surprise. Continuing, under the Act, the Treasury Department is obliged to cap insurers' liability and reimburse them for some losses. The bill specifies that the government must pay all insured losses greater than $12.5 billion in the aftermath of a nuclear, biological, or chemical attack by non-Americans. In exchange, the government forced insurers to stop stripping terrorism coverage from their policies. The RAND report urges the U.S. government and insurers to consider programs that would cover terrorism by national groups as well as chemical, nuclear, and biological attacks. Analysis at the prominent think tank also believes, analysts at the prominent think tank also believe state governors should form a national board to assess the performance of TRIA. Note that among the weaknesses in the provisions by the insurance industry and the government for a terrorist act concerns the failure to guard against an attack by, quote, domestic, unquote, terrorists. One of the things that we've looked at in, among other programs, For the Record 474, and something that the search engine on the Spitfire website can be utilized for, and that concerns the revelations of Mike German, a former FBI agent who specialized in infiltrating white supremacist groups in the United States. He had come across instances that of white supremacist groups in the U.S. hooking up with various Islamist terrorist groups. And indeed, when one examines the information contained in, among other broadcasts, For the Record 456, it's apparent that there was a neo-Nazi slash white supremacist component to not only the September 11th attacks, but also the first World Trade Center attack, the Oklahoma City bombing, and the AMIA bombing in Argentina in 1994. There are a number of evidentiary tributaries connecting those apparently disparate crimes. And indeed, if the launchers of the next foul deed, so to speak, should happen to be domestic white supremacists, whether or not they're acting at the collusion of Islamists, that could very well leave the insurance industry an out, and they wouldn't have to insure businesses, and that could lead to an economic catastrophe. So again, note that one of the major vulnerabilities of the United States to terrorism and to something that would essentially knock the U.S. out of the box in terms of world competition, and that concerns the vulnerability of various aspects of our economy to a terrorist incident. Indeed, in early 2004, the International Monetary Fund warned that another attack along the lines of September 11th or the Madrid bombing from March of 2004 could very easily place the world economy, and specifically the equities markets, in a dangerous zone in which we might see a worldwide economic collapse stemming from a terrorist incident. So the vulnerability of economies to terrorist incidents extends around the world, and not just to the United States. A scary article came out in a number of different newspapers. The account that I'm going to be reading comes from the Los Angeles Times, specifically from the LA Times of June 29th of 2005. This article is called, Study Shows How Terrorists Could Use Milk to Kill. Subtitled, Federal Officials Tried to Block the Release of a Stanford Report on Security Weaknesses. This article reads in part, about a third of an ounce of botulinum toxin poured into a milk truck en route from a dairy farm to a processing plant could cause hundreds of thousands of deaths and billions of dollars in economic losses, according to a scientific analysis published Tuesday, despite efforts by federal officials to keep the details of that study secret. The study by Lawrence M. Wine and Yifan Liu of Stanford University discusses such questions as how terrorists could release the toxin and what effective amounts might be. Bruce Alberts, president of the National Academy of Sciences, said in an accompanying editorial that a terrorist would not learn anything useful from the article about the minimum amount of toxin to use. Quote, and we can detect no other information in this article important for a terrorist that is not already immediately available to anyone who has access to information from the World Wide Web, unquote. In fact, he said publication of the article by the Academy could be valuable for biodefense. The analysis, posted Tuesday on the website of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, seeks to quantify security weaknesses in the nation's milk supply chain and makes recommendations for closing those gaps. Although some of the suggested changes are underway, federal officials thought the material had enough potential for misuse to warrant a last-minute effort to halt publication. That effort, which delayed the report's unveiling by a month, but ultimately failed to keep it from becoming public, proved to be as contentious as the publication itself, and assured the report's place in scientific canon as one of the first test cases of how to balance scientific freedom and national security in the post-9/11 era. Wine, whose previous research had forecast the likely effects of terrorist attacks involving anthrax and smallpox, said he was surprised by the government's push to block publication. As long as last fall, Wine said, he had briefed high-ranking officials of the Departments of Homeland Security and Health and Human Services, along with the dairy industry representatives, on his work. Quote, it was clear the dairy people were nervous about this paper coming out, unquote, Wine said. But when federal officials did not follow up, he said, he assumed they had concluded that everything in the article was already publicly available and easily obtained through an internet search. Bill Hall, a spokesman for HHS, said Tuesday that his department still opposed publication, but was not in a position to block release of the data which were not classified. Quote, we respect the Academy's position, but we don't agree with it, Hall said. The quote, consequences could be dire, and it will be HHS and not the Academy that will have to deal with it, unquote. The report describes the milk supply chain from cow to consumer. It describes points where a toxin could be introduced, such as a holding tank at a farm, a truck transporting milk to the processing plant, or a raw milk holding tank at the plant. The analysis by Wan and Liu considered what might happen if terrorists poured into a milk tanker truck a couple of gallons of concentrated sludge containing botulinum toxin, a potent bacterial nerve poison now popular in low doses as a wrinkle eraser. Because milk from many sources is combined in huge tanks, the toxin would get widely distributed and within days could be consumed by 568,000 people, the report concludes. All of which, I'm sure, would make the insuring of the dairy industry that much more problematic. Another disturbing study, once again to be taken in conjunction with the others, in terms of helping us to gauge just how safe the Bush administration has actually made us. And again, whenever something goes wrong with the Bush administration, it cites September 11th and the war on terror. In fact, the Bush administration has made this country far less safe and not more safe. And taking in conjunction, taking the article about the vulnerability of the U.S. from an economic standpoint due to the insurance situation here, and taking into account that chilling article about how vulnerable the dairy industry is, consider the following. And again, bearing in mind that with the Iraqi misadventure, the Bush administration tossed a brick into the hornet's nest of the already largely hostile Muslim world. And indeed, in the overall underlying hypothesis of September 11th and related events, I believe that the underground Reich is basically maneuvering things in such a way as the United States is going to find itself locked into certainly a very costly and destructive, if not ultimately fatal, war with the various Muslim populations of the Earth Island being utilized as proxy warriors by the underground Reich. In any event, in that context, consider the following. This from the New York Times of June 22nd of 2005, an article titled U.S. Borders Vulnerable, Witnesses Say. This article is by Eric Lipton, L-I-P-T-O-N. It reads as follows. The federal government's effort to prevent terrorists from smuggling a nuclear weapon into the United States are so poorly managed and reliant on ineffective equipment that the nation remains extremely vulnerable to a catastrophic attack, scientists and a government auditor warned a House committee on Tuesday. The assessment, coming nearly 4 years after the September 2001 attacks and after the investment of $800 million by the United States government, prompted expressions of frustration and disappointment from lawmakers. Quote, "If we go ahead and spend the money and don't succeed, I don't understand that," unquote, said Representative Steve Pierce, Republican of New Mexico. Four federal departments, Homeland Security, Defense, Energy, and State, are involved in a global campaign to try to prevent the illicit acquisition, movement, and use of radioactive materials, which includes efforts to prevent theft of nuclear materials from former Soviet stockpiles and inspecting cargo containers on arrival from around the world. Dirty bombs, crude devices that widely spread low levels of radiation, are relatively easy to detect. But highly enriched uranium, a crucial ingredient in a nuclear bomb, could easily be shielded with less than a quarter inch of lead, making it, quote, "very likely to escape detection by passive radiation monitors," unquote, now installed at ports and border stations. Ben Tannenbaum, a physicist and senior program associate at the American Association for the Advancement of Science, testified at Tuesday's hearings. The monitors are unable to distinguish between naturally occurring radiation from everyday items like ceramic tile and dangerous material like enriched uranium. "It has been, let me say, a bad few years," unquote, Dr. Tannenbaum said. Customs officials also at times allow trucks to pass through the monitors too quickly, said Jean Aloise, an official from the Government Accountability Office. "And because the devices sound so many false alarms," Mr. Aloise said, "their sensitivity has been turned down, making them less effective still." Nationally, less than a quarter of the radiation detection devices needed to check all goods crossing borders have been installed, federal officials said. In New York, for example, none of the cargo that moves through the largest ship terminal or goods leaving the port by rail or barge are inspected for radiation. Beth Ann Rooney, manager of security for the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, testified. The problems extend beyond the borders, witnesses said. About half of the monitors given to one former Soviet state were never installed or put into use. A monitor that the State Department gave to Bulgaria was set up on an unused road, and sea spray and winds at some ports overseas may have compromised the detection equipment, Mr. Aloise said. Richard L. Wagner, Jr., a physicist at the Los Alamos National Laboratory and chairman of the Defense Department Task Force on Preventing a Clandestine Nuclear Attack, agreed that the radiation detection systems installed across the United States were, quote, "quite limited in their capabilities and, in general, are insufficient to the task," unquote. But the situation, Dr. Wagner said, is not surprising given the rapid startup of the effort. Quote, there will be false starts and there will be money wasted, unquote, he said. Representative Jim Langevin, Democrat of Rhode Island, asked how Homeland Security should apportion $125 million in the coming fiscal year between buying more of the same radiation monitor technology and supporting research into better technology. Two witnesses called for putting the detection equipment on ships so threats could be identified before reaching the United States. Members of Congress have also recently questioned a proposal by the Bush administration to spend $227 million in the coming year to create a domestic nuclear detection office, skeptical that it will do more than add a new layer of bureaucracy. I am not too hopeful about this situation, unquote, Representative Bill Pascrell, Jr., Democrat in New Jersey, said. Well, in addition, obviously, to the problems vis-a-vis the detection equipment, the reliability of some of our allies in the so-called war on terror, a very real war, but one that it's difficult to imagine this administration being too serious about, given the high-level connections between the Bush administration and people in it, and the forces that have been funding al-Qaeda, and also given the kid glove treatment that the Bush administration has given to the two most important individual states that have been backing al-Qaeda and related organizations, namely Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. Pakistan, of course, is a nuclear power. It is viewed as an ally in the, quote, war on terror, unquote, yet recent disclosures have indicated that, in fact, the Pakistani security services and its notorious intelligence agency, the ISI, have been, shall we say, less than vigorous in their alleged pursuit of al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. In fact, it appears that many of the people involved in the Pakistani security services and military are actually sympathetic to al-Qaeda and have been providing aid to al-Qaeda and related forces after the fall of Afghanistan. I would note, too, that the Khan smuggling network has been handled to a large extent with kid gloves by this administration, rather than looking at the obvious indications of high-level Pakistani military complicity with the Khan nuclear smuggling network, whose genesis goes back to some of the Third Reich alumni associated with New Chem and Degussa. The indications of Pakistani military complicity in the Khan network have been largely overlooked, and many of the Pakistani nuclear establishment, many people within the Pakistani nuclear establishment are very sympathetic to al-Qaeda, something that makes that last article all the more chilling. One of the things that I want to note, too, is that vis-a-vis any sort of nuclear attack, that the threat assessment software architecture for not only the FAA and NORAD, but the United States Air Force on September 11th, was developed by a company called PTEC that we're going to be talking about in just a minute. Among the many terrorist financiers associated with PTEC is a fellow named Yassin Al-Qadi, who's the continuing investigation of whom we're going to talk about in just a couple of minutes. But in terms of assessing not only the anomalous performance of air defense units on September 11th, but also looking ahead to the future of nuclear, the possibility of nuclear terrorism, bear in mind that PTEC, for all intents and purposes, a direct offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, al-Taqwa, and by extension al-Qaeda, was developing the threat assessment software for the Air Force, the FAA, and NORAD. And again, I suspect that may very well have had something to do with the anomalous performance of air defense units on September 11th. PTEC was also developing software for the Department of Energy that handles nuclear power plants and also has a lot to do with maintaining the security for nuclear weapon systems as well. So, in the discussion that we're about to touch on vis-a-vis PTEC and Yassin Al-Qadi, bear in mind, too, that this organization also has a great deal to do with the security of nuclear power plants and nuclear weapon sites as well. And among other programs, for the record 462 and 464, we took a look at PTEC, and specifically we took a look at a number of people with links to the Altaqua Milieu, a number of people with links to Sheikh Rahman, the blind priest, the blind cleric implicated in some of the incidents around the First World Trade Center attack, as well as a fellow named Yaqub Mirza were associated with PTEC. Yaqub Mirza set up the American branch of the Muslim World League, a Saudi Islamic charity that has been a major front for the funding of terrorism, including Al-Qaeda. Yaqub Mirza also set up the various fronts, the various charities and businesses that were raided on March 20th, 2002, when one examines the SAR network and the Safa Trust and the related individuals and institutions. They overlap not only the GOP and Grover Norquist Islamic Institute, but they overlap the world of Yaqub Mirza and the world of PTEC. Yaqub Mirza is a director of PTEC, and when some of the people involved with PTEC voiced concern that such sensitive software could be developed by a company with links to Al-Qaeda, the dissenting employee was told, oh, don't worry, Yaqub Mirza has very high connections within the FBI. The investigation into PTEC has been badly attenuated. It was included under the Operation Green Quest umbrella, and that was subverted in part because of the Justice Department efforts of Robert Mueller and others. Robert Mueller has proved less than vigorous in various national security-related investigations, running from BCCI to Mr. Noriega, to the bombing of Pan Am 103, to the money trails associated with Operation Green Quest, and again, the Department of Justice and also Michael Chertoff, now the head of the Department of Homeland Security, have proved less than vigorous in their pursuit of not only Operation Green Quest, but PTEC. Remember, before we conclude this side, that Spitfire at www.spitfirelist.com has thousands of pages at this point of printed material available. The landmark text, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, is available. A link to a website maintained by listeners in the Midwest that feature all of the declassified U.S. government documents that prove the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and after World War II. These are all available on the Spitfire website. I'm turning each For the Record show into a written article-length description. I'm about a month behind still on those, but I'm slowly getting caught up. And so do visit the For the Record section at www.spitfirelist.com for a wealth of information. The first two lectures that I've done, the political implications of the UFO phenomenon and the ET myth, and the future technology, theocracy, and the Thousand-Year Reich, are now available for download on both Real Audio and MP3, all of those for free. Also links to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU that feature the entire For the Record series on both Real Audio and now MP3 as well. www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery has the more recent shows available, older programs available at a linked website as well. On the Spitfire website, there's also a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 517. Update on September 11th and related matters. This is being recorded on July 3rd of the year 2005. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.